Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, episode 97.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
I never felt sorry for anything I'd done, other than her and my family. The only thing I feel sorry for I'm not looking for forgiveness. I'm not repenting. I know I'm wrong. I'm wrong. I do want my family to forgive me. Oh, boy. I ain't gonna make this one. This would never be me. This would not be me. You see the Iceman crying? Not very macho. But I hurt people. That mean everything to me. But the only people that mean anything to me
Hello and welcome to the Plain Label Podcast. I am your host, Eric Williams, and along with me is my good friend and co-host, Mrs. Rachel Zelag.
I could have been a contender.
Nice. Gotta get the gravel in your voice.
I can.
Yeah. In this episode, we are starting our new theme of movies about the mob. In this episode, we are discussing On the Waterfront and The Iceman.
The Iceman. I like that better, actually.
All Spider-Man. Before getting into our discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. Mrs. Zelag, let's do a little drink roll call action. What do you got for me?
Well, I had a pretty rough weekend.
Say it ain't so.
Honest. What?
Said say it ain't so.
Right? Little bit of drinking. So I am going real safe with just vodka lemonade.
With just vodka.
Yeah.
Lemonade. I'm in the same sort of boat, not because I had a rough weekend, but just because I had been sick for a little while, but I have a little vodka spicy tomato juice.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
See, that's what I started out on Saturday.
Ooh, a little red drink, not yep. Red beer.
Red drink.
Yeah. Right. Much different than grape drink.
Right. Purple.
Purple drink. Well, whatever. That shows how wide I am, I guess.
Go eat some mayonnaise instead.
Okay, so we're going to start off our discussion. It is just Rachel and I, so sorry to disappoint those that were accustomed to the big group of people.
Yeah, fuckers.
Stuck with us. So we're going to start off our discussion with my selection. It is from 1954, and it is On the Waterfront.
Thank you.
only my philosophy of life. Do it to him before he does it to you. What do you want?
Your gun. We got the fattest piers and the fattest harbor in the world. Everything moves in and out. We take our gun.
Edie!
Father, who'd want to kill Joey? Who'd want to kill Joey?
Listen, you know who the pistols are. You're going to keep still until they cut you down one by one?
About being a prize fighter while tending his pigeons and running errands at the docks for Johnny Friendly, the corrupt boss of the Dockers Union. Dockers? Yep. Okay. Terry witnesses a murder by two of Johnny's thugs and later meets the dead man's sister and feels responsible for his death. She introduces him to Father Barry, who tries to force him to provide information for the courts that will smash the dock racketeers. I feel like that was a tongue twister a little bit.
It was.
Okay.
I looked. I saw that and I was like, ah, oh, damn. I have been there, you know, especially like we were saying before we started recording, reading some of the books to the kids, not always meant to be read out loud. It works a little better when you're just reading it as opposed to performing the entire thing. Okay. So this is my selection. This was a film that I, of course, knew a whole lot of nothing about. I knew that it was, that it's really a very famous film, that it, you know, has the Marlon Brando. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
It does?
Yep. Mm. In case you didn't know that.
I didn't.
Yeah, it was in case you were doing the whole Ron Burgundy thing there. I just put that in your in the script. Perform Marlon Brando line.
Do things.
Say the words. So I picked this one. What I wanted to do, and I don't know, I feel like we're pretty much in sync with this, but we didn't discuss it, but what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to pick The Godfather.
Right.
Or, you know, Scarface, or, well, I guess it's, I mean, that's sort of about the mob. About, you know, and, Goodfellas, and just those, the sort of ones that immediately pop into your, pop in your mind.
Agreed.
Yeah, so I wanted to pick something that was just a little bit different. And I went with this one, and I absolutely loved this movie, Cruz. And
why?
What's funny about it is I, you know, you watch the movie and it starts off and it doesn't say on the waterfront right away. It says Marlon fucking Brando.
Right.
As big as the world, like just right there, Marlon Brando. And I'm like, holy shit. Like that is carrying some weight in front of this movie. And then it says on the waterfront. And this was a movie that I knew little enough about to where I didn't have to worry about expectations. I knew it was supposed to be good, you know, obviously.
Right.
And it won 8 Oscars, but I didn't know a lot about the story.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, like, oh, well, you have to look out for this sort of production design or this sort of musical cue or this shot that they invented, or, you know, I didn't know anything about anything like that. And so I watched it And I could not help but just sort of feel like I was studying Marlon Brando the whole time.
Right.
Just watching what he was doing. You know, not only just because of the character, just because I was like, God damn, like he is this guy right now.
Isn't that kind of his, like, thing, though? Doesn't he try to, what's that called, method acting?
Yeah, method where you just fall into the performance.
Right, just, like, tries to get into it totally.
Yeah, and, you know, I know Marlon Brando some, but it's not like I've seen all of his pictures. Yeah. And so here, you know, with him really kind of swinging for it, I was like, all right, you know, let's see how he does. And I was pretty mesmerized. I was really, really impressed and sort of taken aback a little bit. You know, we also do have Lee J. Cobb as Johnny Friendly, also in 12 Angry Men, amongst other films. Yeah. And he plays a wonderful bad guy. Just, he has, I put down that he looks to me like the way that Joan Cusack, the way that she talks. With like that sort of upturned nose when they talk, like something smells bad.
Right.
He has that same look at all times. And it reminded me so much of Joan Cusack. It was weird. I was like, wow, this is completely
weird. Maybe there's like a weird relation that we don't know about.
Could be. And so anyway, I thought
I think it's like the mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like right in the sort of nose-mouth area is what.
Right, nose-mouth area.
But yeah, so I really liked it. But before I gush about it, what did you think about this, Cruz? Are we at odds here?
No. When you said the Marlon Brando thing, you know, Guys and Dolls is like one of my favorite musicals, actually just straight-up movies of all time. And there's like a deleted scenes or like commentary on the movie that I have, and the biggest selling point of Guys and Dolls was Marlon Brando sings.
Oh, that's right.
So, like, he apparently was, like, the tits, you know? He was more than Ron Burgundy. So.
Which we did, Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
Back in
yeah.
the musical. Which, you know, when I think about that, when I think about how we did musicals, I'm like, oh, yeah, that wasn't too long ago. I believe that was, like, episode 10.
I know. So.
Like, what?
Well, that's like, oh, I don't even need to get into it with you, but like, whenever you ask me to pick a movie, I'm like, have we already done this? And you're like, I don't know. Like, we should just keep talking about the ones we like.
Yeah.
Everybody.
It, well, I mean, you know, we're at episode 96, and, you know, some of the episodes we've done just two. You know, we used to do four. Sometimes we did three.
Right.
You know, sometimes we've done a ton. So, I mean, we've done, you know, hundreds of movies. And I used to put them up on our website so people could click on them if they wanted to and buy yeah. them. I lost track of that pretty quickly and was like, holy shit. Like, this is a lot of work for nothing on our end at all. So I'm not going to do this anymore.
Wow.
But yeah, so, I mean, it is tough. It's tough to remember. But that anyway, so Guys and Dolls, you really liked it. I was surprised by how much I liked it. And you're continuing on with Mr. Marlon Brando.
Yes, and I've seen A Streetcar Named Desire where he was like crazy maniac in that, and he was amazing. So, I mean, that wasn't really a surprise to me. I did like super appreciate his performance because he obviously carried the film. If they would have cast somebody who was not a good actor, not even just Marlon Brando, this wouldn't have, I don't think, turned out the way it did. And I guess like all in all, it wasn't like life altering, but I thought it was a good story, and like the way it played out was really interesting. And the end got a little melodramatic, but I think it's just because of the time period and, you know, just kind of how movies were at that time.
Are you talking about the fight?
Yeah, you know, they got the fight and he, just like the, you know, it's just shot in like a 50s way, I guess.
Oh, okay, sure.
You know, like he's fighting and they don't really show a lot of that. And then he gets up, you know, but I was like, yeah, you fucking walk up there, you know? So I was all for it. Like it had me till the end and I did enjoy it. So.
And okay. So what I really enjoyed about it was I was so taken with, The sort of idea of this is a movie about a grown-up man who finds his identity, who figures out who he is. Because I feel like so often we see these coming-of-age stories.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And they're like 15, and they're like, oh, I've got all these problems. You know, and you're like, fuck you, just go to school and shut up.
Right.
And they're like, so you won't remember who that person is in 3 months. Like, don't worry about it. So I liked that this was a guy who had, you know, his life sort of figured out, whether he enjoyed it or not. He was kind of in this situation and eventually decides, fuck that, I'm changing. I'm doing something different.
Well,
I'm unsatisfied or dissatisfied.
I think that also he didn't, I don't think he enjoyed where he was.
No. No.
I think he, didn't he call himself a bum? I just feel
his quote, yeah, his famous quote.
And so like he was, wasn't he taking dives for the mob?
He did, yeah, he took a dive.
And so like he...
Because his brother told him to.
Right, and I feel like that's a huge regret on his part, and then he kind of just like ambled along and followed his brother and didn't really know what to do until he did something, that made him feel even worse than that. By, like, allowing that guy to die.
Yeah, and so finally then, finally saying, this is, enough's enough.
Right, well, I mean, not even then, though, I feel like he was just like, oh, shit, that's awful. But, like, he just kept getting, like, I don't want to say guilt-tripped into it, but, like, you can see, obviously, the change in the movie, that's the whole point. But, like, you know, because at the beginning, I'm like, oh, Marlon Brando, tough guy. And then, like, around the middle part, I'm like, oh man, do some standing up, do some good guy stuff. And so, and then I didn't want her to find out that he was, you know, like I wanted them to work out. So like I was all for him at the time, but you can definitely see the transition from being just kind of like a wayward person to, you know, kind of just feeling bad to being like basically almost a martyr for the cause.
Sure. And I think what I like so much about that is I'm sitting there watching it and I'm thinking like, this is what, America wants its citizens to be. I feel like.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you're broken down by a system or by something that's unfair or that you're unhappy with, then you have the responsibility to stand up and make a change.
Yeah.
And I was like, fucking A movie. Like I'm with you. Like I got it. You know,
I was too, totally.
And so I'm like, yeah, you know, let's do this. And, you know, from, you know, as people know, you know, I made a career change not too long ago. So it's sort of like watching validation.
There you go.
Me. I was like, oh, even though the kids are not what I want them to be all the time, I'm like, okay, well, this is good. This is what I should have done. See, this movie's telling me that I was right.
On the school front.
Right. Ah, just do your work. That's basically what I'd be doing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So, I really enjoyed that.
Let's talk about the enthusiasm of Father Barry, because damn.
Yeah, now he is the sort of guy that would make me religious. Because he has such conviction.
Yeah.
And is willing to go out away from the church and to, you know, put his hands on people essentially to make them change their ways.
Yeah, and like literally just yelling in the faces of people. Like he was yelling when that guy died in the...
Oh, from the booze falling on him or whatever it was?
Yeah. He was like yelling at the people to make a change, and then the mob people are like standing up there watching him, and he's like, I don't care that you're out there. I don't give a shit. So like, he's pretty ballsy as far as being a father goes.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing where it's like, okay, that's what you're supposed to be, religion. You know, you're supposed to be this ideal. You're supposed to be out convincing people that what they're doing isn't right and why they should change. And because it wasn't saying things like, oh, you know, it's just in God's hands.
Right.
What can you do? You know, it was like, fuck that. You need to, you know, you're supposed to be using this as an example. You know, you're supposed to be living this life through the church to where you're standing up for yourself, you know, and that sort of thing.
Right.
That sort of ideal. And I don't know. I just really thought that that was really effective. I was like, this fucking guy gets it.
Yeah. And he gets it and like takes it and like very passionately regurgitates it back out. So.
Right. What did you, I want to talk about Eva Marie Saint. What did you, you said that you wished that he hadn't revealed what he didn't do or what he set up.
Well, I mean, anyone who's ever watched a movie could see that that was going to happen at some point.
Of course, yeah.
And so I was just like, oh, and I, you know, they're dancing or whatever, and I'm like, oh, she's going to find out now. And she's going to be mad at him. And like, they're going to have, they didn't have, to their credit, like a sad, ballad montage at all. But, mm-hmm. There was some sadness going on. And I liked how when he told her, we didn't have to see it.
Ooh, or hear it. I was just going to ask you about that.
Because it would have been, because like I was so on board with him, and I think that like having him explain it to her and having to sit through that would have been like super awkward. And so I kind of just liked the fact that like I didn't have to hear exact, like obviously you know what's going on, so you didn't have to hear exactly what was going on, and you could just collect from body language, I guess, what she obviously thought of what he told her.
Yeah, with her running off and all that.
Yeah.
What I really like about that is I feel like that is a really masculine, macho choice by the director to not show Marlon Brando sort of, cowering and saying, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, this happened. I didn't mean it to, you know, it's a real kind of sexist way to go about that. I think it's interesting because now we would see that and they would stretch out the melodrama. But at this time, it's kind of like, well, we can't show him being weak to the woman. Like, sure, he can get beat up by a guy, but we can't have him, like, apologizing.
Do you think that's sexism or just more his character?
I don't know.
Because, like, I didn't catch, I mean, like, I'm not on the lookout for every, you know, sexism all the time. But when I see it, I usually, I'm like, oh, okay. But that didn't really ring like that for me.
Sure.
It was more of like, because we got to watch, it was like cinematic because we watched Father Barry watch them.
Yes.
And so it didn't like smack of sexism to me. I guess
the way that I look at it is I think that it's in the 50s. We still don't really have this equality between the sexes. And it's, I just feel.
Today or in the 50s? Oh.
in the 1950s especially.
Hmm.
And so I just think of the, Leave It to Beaver sort of.
Yeah, but if you think of the girl, she's not stereotypical 50s. She's in there punching people and like yelling at people. And
sure, she is, yeah. I guess I just think that they made a choice to not have him sort of grovel to.
Probably. Yeah. I would agree with that.
And so that's when I spiraled into, well, why? Why would they do that? Well, maybe it's because it's the 50s. Maybe they're being sexist. Maybe Marlon Brando said, fuck that. I'm not doing that.
That actually is probably what happened.
And they're like, all right, you got it, buddy.
Doesn't he kind of just do whatever the fuck he wants? And I know that you read, and I read it too, that his scene in the cab with that guy, he wasn't even in there for most of the shots of the guy's face, his brother.
Oh, when he's doing that, I could have been a contender.
Yeah.
Thing. I didn't read that. What do you mean?
So, like, Marlon Brando had, like, a standing, like, 3 o'clock appointment or something with his psychiatrist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see it here now.
Yeah, and he like took off, and the, you know, facial expressions of him supposedly reacting to Marlon Brando, he had to just like do with another guy in there, which wouldn't have been the end of the world, but I guess he was like super pissed about it. So
yeah, it says he's very upset. I wonder, God, that's too bad. You know, you watch somebody and you see them and they're so good at what they're doing, and then you find out that they're kind of a dick.
Well, I think that I've gathered that he was not super easy to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I knew about the whole Apocalypse Now stuff where he gained all this, all the weight, and I think I'd heard, I could be wrong, but I think I heard something about in the first Superman movie about how he wasn't really easy to get along with there either or something.
Yeah.
So I just kind of figured that that was the deal, but I didn't know if when he was younger, if that was a thing too, so I guess I didn't,
Yeah, I wonder, like, I don't know, I'm sure that there's a, probably a pretty good Marlon Brando biography that would probably detail a lot of that craziness.
Yeah, I would imagine there's some kind of documentary about him. I would imagine. Hmm. So you already mentioned the end a little bit, but I do want to talk about how basically he just goes straight up to L.J. Cobb and is like, let's
take
fucking
that grasshopper. Yeah.
He's like, let's just throw hands, bro. Like, let's fucking do this. And what I like about it is, you know, it makes me wistful for the simpler times of let's just go beat someone up. You know, I mean, because you,
please have that be the lead-in.
You think about, you know, when I was in middle school. Granted, it's a while now, but it was like if you didn't like some kid, you just went and fought,
right?
And then you got it out of your system, and that was it. It wasn't any of this like, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to keep picking on him and then he's going to freak out and then he might, you know, do this to this kid and there's going to be all these pranks. It's like, no, you just go fight and you fucking get it over with.
Right. Obviously, you weren't a girl in middle school.
Well,
we're going to make her not sit by us. This is not me, by the way. We're going to make her not sit by us and then we're going to talk about her while she is not there.
Yeah.
Or just a girl in
general. Gossipy girls. Sheesh. Yeah. Unbelievable. But no, so I saw that and was like, yeah, you know, kick his ass. You know? Get him. And Johnny Friendly, which I like the fact that he was a bad guy that was, you know, he's a corrupt mob guy, but he's like, I could all fucking beat this former boxer up. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, he did get his hands dirty.
Yeah, and he got his face all jacked up. And then, you know, he sends his goons in to beat the shit out of him.
Right.
Out of Marlon Brando.
The one thing, like, even at the beginning of this, when he is telling his, you know, like, Scarfacean story about how he rose from the poor, I'm like, you still, like, rose out of the poor by stealing from people and killing them and beating them up. Is this supposed to be inspirational to us? Because I'm not inspired by your story.
Yeah.
Go on.
I was just gonna ask you and you know, then we have the whole triumphant, you know, him chasing after him and walking and having the dignity to, you know, to, even though he's all beat up, to still be there for the part of like a true union and to work and work on the ship and all that sort of stuff. And so I was, you know, I was real pleased by that. But how do you feel that the mob, since our theme is mob, how do you feel like it was represented in this? Do you think that it was about like you'd expect or like about what you've grown to think as a typical representation, or what did you think?
Okay, so, I mean, to have a starting off point, my typical representation of the mob will always be The Godfather, just because, like,
Marlon Brando, yeah.
And so, oh my god, is this like full circle? Did he start his own mob? No, wait, he was from Italy. Okay. Yeah, so.
That wasn't Terry.
Right. That was not Terry. Okay. but I felt like this, cause like the mob to me is family, first of all, usually. And then, you know, like the mob boss is usually hands off.
Yes.
And a lot more.
An untouchable sort of guy.
Yes. And a lot, so like, you know, nothing can be traced back and more people are getting, like, secretly killed and, like, dropped in the desert, I guess, instead of just, like, shoved off buildings, which is pretty, I mean, you can shove someone off a building and nobody can prove that it was, you know, that anyone did it. So that was pretty smart, too.
These definitely guys sends a message as opposed to just disappearing.
Yeah, that is very true. These guys seem to be less scary to me and more kind of, I don't want to use the word bumbling because it's not super accurate, but they just don't seem like they are kind of a group of, like, stone-cold killers, I guess, because they're just, like, giggling about it, and they kind of just hang out at the pool hall, so I don't know. This isn't, I mean, you know, they're kind of a force, obviously, to be reckoned with there at that time, but, like, it's not the typical what I would think of, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I feel like the movie is a, it's a classic movie, one that I will probably buy. I'll probably put on my wish list, we'll say. maybe I'll eventually get to. But I feel like it's more of a classic movie than it is a classic mob movie.
Sure.
Because I think you're right. I think that while the mob is there, and they're definitely a big part of the film, they're not really as troubling as just the one guy.
Yeah.
As, you know, Mr. Friendly. So I do like that name a lot, though.
I do, too, fun. Johnny Friendly.
Yeah. I think that's fun. I like Johnny anything, basically.
Yeah.
I think that that's just a fun thing to play around with. But, yeah, so I don't know. I liked the movie quite a bit. I thought that the mob guys were, you know, they I don't feel like they were meant to be taken that serious. I mean, they killed his brother, but I was like, well, good. His brother sounded like a dick. Well, and then they were at the courthouse, and, you know, they were standing. One dude was covering his face. It was a little bit of slight comedy thrown in there.
Right.
When they're introducing people, because one dude, like, said something about, he said something when he was introduced, and the next guy, like, sort of stood up, but sort of stood up at the wrong time, and, you know, it was just kind of a goofy little.
Yeah, side. They seem kind of like, what is that called? Like, just muscle, dumb muscle or something?
Yeah, like a street tough, just like a group of bad guys instead of a
group. Like, I didn't even need to finish fourth grade. Look at me.
You know, I did think it was interesting that they showed Johnny Friendly's boss, or the guy that was in charge of him, because he's like, oh, if he calls, tell him I'm out.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's clever. Like, I like that. I was like, that's clever. That shows that, you know, it's not just an isolated one guy that's in charge of this waterfront.
Right. So maybe, like, that guy is the untouchable.
Yeah, it could be.
And then Johnny's just running his branch of the mob not so well.
Yeah. It is, you are right, though, that the focus usually has more of the untouchable guy.
Yeah.
Than it does just Johnny Friendly, so. All right, well, anything that we missed or anything like that on this one, Cruz?
No. Oh.
All right. Well, I was very pleased with my own selection, I will say.
Are you going to get some pigeons?
I don't know. I wonder, I don't know this for sure. I mean, I know that's commonly known that Mike Tyson was a big pigeons guy. I wonder if he was a big on-the-waterfront guy.
Yeah, he seems
pretty similar. You know what I mean? Like, he's like a surprisingly artsy kind of guy.
Yeah. I bet someone probably just said, you know, in Waterfront, that boxer guy had pigeons. And he's like, what? That sounds amazing.
I was hoping that was going to follow the whole joke. Like, I hope that was going to happen. I didn't want to make it happen, so.
We should just have a segment called Rachel's Absolutely Horrible Impressions.
That's good. So anyway, yes, I really did like this one. Before we move on to Rachel's pick, we should mention that Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. So go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. All right, so Rachel's pick is just a year or two in the future from On the Waterfront.
Yeah, one or two.
Yeah, it's from 2012, and it is The Iceman.
Roses are red, violets are blue. My Annabelle is as golden as the light of the moon.
What's this?
You think I'm a spoiled brat?
You like to be taken care of. There's nothing wrong with that.
I like the way you take care of me.
You're a family man now?
A wife? Kids? Who are you kidding?
Closing lab. Sorry, but you're out of a job. You follow orders, you got everything to gain.
If you don't have it in you, now's the time to say it.
Thank you.
good at what I do.
What about leaving witnesses at a murder scene?
I don't kill women or children.
I have loose ends now.
All right, kids, that's it. Go on home. We're closed.
You got a second?
So is it my lucky day or my last?
I want to be my partner.
You take care of the details. I do the hit.
Might as well look out for each other, right?
You're doing hits behind my back. I can imagine what you've been telling them, thinking their dad's a decent guy.
I'm really proud of you, Richie.
Our paths cross again. I'm gonna bury your whole family.
Dad?
There ain't gonna be nothing else to be afraid of.
I didn't know I was supposed to be afraid.
No, no, God, please! What are you doing? Praying? You think God's gonna save you? You tell him to come down and stop me. I guess God's busy.
Don't!
In the 1960s, Richard Kuklinski is working as a porn film lab tech until his mob bosses persuade him to change his career into that of a contract killer. For years, Kuklinski gains a reputation for cold-blooded professionalism, even as he raises a family who are kept in the dark about his true career. Unfortunately, mob politics ultimately forces him to secretly work independently with the psychopathic Robert Mr. Freezy Prawn. As much as Kuklinski tries to keep his life separate, circumstances and his own weaknesses threaten a terrible collision as the consequences of his choices finally catch up to him.
Kuklinski is a tough one.
Kuklinski.
It's just cumbersome.
Right.
Should change his name.
Right? Stupid, yeah. Foolish names.
Iceman. Richard Iceman.
The Iceman, yeah.
The Iceman. All right, so tell me about this selection. It was on Netflix Instant, which was beneficial.
Right.
What else?
That was it.
All right.
No. I was looking through, because whenever you tell me to pick out, I just Google what you say, and then I pick out a movie. And this one had gotten some pretty good reviews, and it was on Netflix. And so I was like, let's just give this a shot. And I like the lead guy. What else?
Oh, Michael Shannon. Well, he was the bad guy in Man of Steel. Of course.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, but I know him best from Take Shelter, which is one of my favorite movies ever.
Really? Have I seen it?
From 2011. I don't think that you have, actually.
Oh, we should do a thing where I have.
Well, yeah, we should. I mean, we have recorded on that. If people want to hear that, they can find that. We did a pod shots on that a little while ago, but you can definitely borrow that, Cruz.
Good.
And watch it. Just on your own. But he did, he had a little cameo in Mud.
Bad
Boy. Shelter. Yep. Iceman. Man of Steel. I don't know. He's just one of those guys that's in a lot of things. What's that?
He was Fred in Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day, 8 Mile, Vanilla Sky. He just had a lot of little parts. Bug was a big one.
What?
He was in Bug.
Bug.
Yeah. That was a movie that Cameron and I did over at our Filmographies podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a guy that's been around. Shotgun Stories is by the same guy that did Take Shelter and Mud with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, I watched Mud.
Yeah. And those are the other two films that the guy has made. And Take Shelter is my favorite of the three, but he always works with, at least through these three films, has always worked with Michael Shannon. And he's got a lot of shit he's doing right now. I mean, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4. He's got like 15 different movies he's either completed that are filming or that are in pre or post production right now.
Make money.
I know. I mean, he's playing Elvis in an Elvis and Nixon movie. He's returning as Zod in the Batman vs. Superman movie.
Oh, man. I love Superman so much.
He's got a lot of stuff he's doing.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. I really like him. I mean, that's the main thing that I wrote down too, is I absolutely love Michael Shannon.
Oh, good. So you weren't so mad. Because what was I going to watch? You told me it was, like, super long.
It was Once Upon a Time in America.
Okay.
And it was, like, it's over 3 hours long. And I said, well, I don't really mind, but just letting you know.
I was like, oh. I could have watched it because all I did was lay on the couch and watch Netflix all day that day. So
I don't know that this would be out, though, if we had to pick that long of one, because I got done about an hour ago. So.
Got it. All right. Well, what'd you think of it then?
You know, I liked it. I'll say that. Like, I wasn't blown away by it. I thought Michael Shannon was great.
Yeah.
I thought that he was terrifying in some scenes.
Yes.
Because he's got the "I'm going to fucking destroy your family" kind of look down to a T. Mm-hmm. So I really liked that. I thought that. I thought the cast was really good.
Yes.
It was almost like stunt casting to me at times, because we had David Schwimmer in there and we had James Franco in there.
Yeah. For like 2 minutes.
Yeah. And so I was like, does it really need to be these guys? Like, you're not selling the movie on these two guys, right?
Right. Well, but, you wouldn't sell a movie on David Schwimmer anymore.
Oh, I would.
Oh, you would.
Lose my shirt, but I would. You know, you have Ray Liotta, who was playing Ray Liotta.
Right. I thought that too, exactly.
I mean, I've got a note about that later, but Chris Evans as Mr. Freezy, I feel like this came out right around the same time as Sunshine did, because he's like looks the same at the during the majority of this.
For a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Captain America looks like scuzzy Captain America, like he did at the beginning of Sunshine also. Which is a few years before. And I thought Winona Ryder was really good. I was really surprised. I was like, wow, good for you. Like, you are nailing this sort of, Northeastern woman right here.
Yeah, like right at the beginning, the first conversation they have
with at the diner.
I was like, oh, please don't be awkward the whole movie. Please just be cool. And then like it got a lot, you know, after that it got a lot better for me.
That's funny, because I think that I was sort of taken by her right away.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, by the end of that scene, I was okay with it.
Oh, okay.
It was just, like, the first, like, couple lines, like, right at the beginning of the movie, I'm like, don't have this be awkward the whole time. For the love of God, don't make this Mr. Deeds.
Oh, you know what I think is weird is, you know, she was a huge star at one point, and now I see her in movies, and I'm like, rooting for her.
I know, because like she was really good in like the late 90s, probably, right?
Well, she was good in the late 80s with you know, Heathers and Beetlejuice and that kind of stuff. Late 80s, early 90s. Edward Scissorhands.
Oh yeah.
Those sorts of deals. And then she had, you know, kind of her I'm a Grown Up sort of deal with Mr. Deeds and a few other movies.
And then she stole stuff.
Yeah, then she stole shit. And then it was like, nope, you're not hireable anymore. And I was like, really? There's a lot of people that do a lot worse shit than steal a few things. Right,
like steal some shit from the mall, but whatever. Like, people are weird.
Yeah, and, you know, she was in Black Swan in a, like, well, you're no good anymore. Natalie Portman is the new Winona Ryder. So see ya.
Right.
It's like, that's the way that I interpreted that. It was like, well, I'm taking your spot in the sort of roles that you used to get. So, and you know, she had, what I guess for me, or, you know, I was hoping that she was going to have a little bit larger of a role, but she played Spock's mom in the Star Trek reboot. And she was in there for like a hot minute and then she was out dead. So I was like, wow, that's okay.
Can you just imagine like what she thinks like, okay, we got you this awesome role in the new Star Trek. She's like, I'm back in the game.
I'm back, baby. Yeah.
Here are your lines. There's like 3 pages. What the fuck? No.
Yeah, because I think that she was cut out quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, but her first movie was Lucas, that 80s classic.
I never saw that.
Oh, really? That's one of those where it's really good in my memory, but I wouldn't want to rewatch it.
Got it.
But you know, she was there with Ethan Hawke with the Reality Bites. You know, the sort of grungy.
Okay. Yeah. No, I remember.
And before that, she had Dracula, and she had Little Women, and How to Make an American Quilt, and just, you know, she was really going for a while.
Yeah.
And then just as, I mean, she still does, she's still working. She just.
Maybe she didn't want to. We don't know her.
Yeah, it could be. I hope maybe she, you know, is, I don't even know if she's married or what the deal is, but, you know, maybe she's raising a family or something.
Well, did you hear me say she's in Beetlejuice 2?
Oh, no, I didn't. Is that a thing?
Apparently.
Oh, shit. Well, whatever.
Oh, it was worth it just to hear you say it like that.
That'll be another movie I guess I'll just have to not pay attention to.
Oh.
Yeah. It's one of those where I don't mind. I don't need to be trendy and go see it in the theater. I can just catch it on Netflix if it's good.
Right. I gotcha.
Yeah. I got too much shit to do. Whatever. Okay. So what did you think of it? I guess we didn't really get into too much what you thought of this movie.
I liked it too. I liked, he carried this film just by himself. He could have, but everyone else was pretty supporting with the, yeah, I mean, like, the weird cameos by, I guess Ross had, like, more than one scene, so he was, like,
Ross.
Well, what else is he? The weird crap. But to the credit of this, the mob is a lot scarier in this movie than it was in On the Waterfront.
Yes.
At least. Like,
right.
We're gonna pick you up, and your first job to see if you can even be in the mob is to kill a bum. And he's like, got it. No problem.
Yeah, and I really liked how it wasn't a grown-up traumatic event that made him, you know, it wasn't like Marlon Brando to where it's like, okay, I've had enough of this bullshit. He's just fucked up.
Right, because like he was killing people before the mob even got there. Like he didn't, it was like almost like when you find your dream job. I kind of felt like that's kind of what happened there.
Wait a minute, they're going to pay me to do this?
They're going to pay me to kill people? I'm already killing people, is what he should have said. Here's my resume. Guy in the car outside the pool hall that talked about my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of animals in my childhood.
Yeah, because that's what Stephen Dorff says, right? His brother is like, what about this time? And what about when you did all this shit? He's like, don't talk about my family anymore, bro.
Right. I'm your family. No, you're not. You're a creepy guy in jail. Bye. Bye, Felicia.
Yeah. Quit screaming. You're in jail. You're going to get solitary.
Right. I feel like, you know, on a side note, if I were in jail, I would try real hard to get solitary. I mean, I don't want to be around other people.
It's true. I mean, especially if you had access to, like, the library.
Yeah. Actually.
Yes, please.
I think that might be.
I mean, you know what? Here, I mean, what I would do, given this scenario, right, is hopefully they didn't take away my book privileges.
Right.
But I would sit there on the bed and read and then fall asleep and then wake up and read and then eat whatever they fed me and then take a nap again and, you know.
Right. I think I would do, like, probably, like, workout, maybe, if I got bored.
I might throw a few push-ups in just so I wouldn't get too tired in case I was into my book or something.
Right. And then, like, the only thing, though, is that I don't think they have Netflix.
Ooh.
And so that's kind of where I'd be like, ah, shit.
Yeah, I guess I would struggle once, like, ooh, I wonder how the Husker's on now, or shit, what is this?
Yeah, but don't they show? You can watch TV in jail.
Probably not in solitary. I don't think you get to do much.
Damn.
So right. I'd be like, I don't know about this. But we work on a little negotiation here.
Right.
TV, gotta have a good Wi-Fi signal, unlimited books, maybe a little comfier mattress, and I'm in.
And I will literally leave you guys alone for the rest of my life. I don't even need you, so. I don't think that would work out, though.
To get some sort of standing order, like a pizza place. bring it by around noon. Good.
I feel like you just need to win the lottery.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm misinterpreting, like, lotto and jail, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think they're the same. I don't think that either of us would think that jail was as fun as we were making it out to be.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, winning the lottery would be, like, my worst nightmare. That's why I don't subscribe to the idiot tax. You know, I feel like if you win the lottery, more people are going to want to talk to you, and that's like the absolute opposite of what I want. Like, no, I have to communicate with people all day.
That doesn't sound like you.
Every day.
No, you don't. You can tell everyone to fuck off if you win the lottery. You can buy your own island. We are getting way off track. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, about this movie.
Yeah. Scary Mob is what we were talking about.
Yeah, Scary Mob, Ray Liotta being Ray Liotta.
Yes.
And I liked the daughters, like the scenes with them.
Uh-huh, about how protective he was with them.
Yeah, and so it's just so weird, but like I, of course, made the mistake of reading about him, because this is a true story.
Sure. Wow.
I was watching this and
about how he's a terrible human being.
Yes, he's like the worst person ever. So, and he would like was a drunk and beat the shit out of his wife all the time. So, I'm just pretending that this movie, you know, is painting a very nice fictional picture, and I'm just gonna go with that for now. So.
You know, I saw that too. And what I think is such bullshit is, so you're telling me that we're watching this movie and we're supposed to root for Kuklinski. Because why else would you not have him beating his wife? Because you want him to be sympathetic. You want him to be the character that we like. Therefore, we like the movie. And I think that's such a shitty thing to do.
Well, and throwing the... I mean, if it wasn't obvious about the non-wife beating, the fact that he, like, loves his little girls is, like... Yeah. It's like throwing a puppy in there, basically.
Oh, absolutely. It's the... Yeah, it's the dog petting scene.
Yeah.
It's the deal from fucking Godzilla where it's like he's got to save the dog.
Yeah.
God. Kick-Ass isn't saving anybody in this movie. But so I was kind of upset by that because I thought that that was cheap. But what I was kind of I guess I liked that the movie stretched over several years.
Yeah.
Like, I really liked that, to where it wasn't, you know, just a day in the life or something. But, excuse me, but I felt like even though we had all of these years, because this character is so emotionless for the most part, that everyone, and including him for the majority of the movie, felt so two-dimensional. Like, it just felt like, okay, here's his mission. And he's either going to complete it or he's not going to complete it. And who cares? He doesn't seem to give a shit. You know, nobody seems to give any of the shits because everyone's so cool and emotionless. Now, he did have his family involved. And that to me was a, oh, you know, like him, like him, like him. And then also it was a, well, they're fucked later because someone's going to come after them.
Right.
And so That was one of those where when I was like in the middle of watching it, I had no problems with it. And, you know, since I do have such a long commute, it gives me a lot of time to think, which is not always great. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck that. That's bullshit. And that's, like, why did they do that? You know, and I'm thinking like, it's so flat. Like all the characters are so flat. Like none of them change. Everyone seems to be the same person.
Right. Even. As the years passed, like,
yeah,
still like super naive to the, up to the very end.
And that was what was disappointing is, you know, why not? I get that in, I believe in real life, she never knew until the end about him being a murderer.
Right.
But she knew that he wasn't a good guy because he was beating the shit out of her.
Right.
And I'm like, really, that's the thing you're going to take out?
Sheesh. Well, and like, I think she had said, you know, like, as soon as they came and arrested him, like, everything that he had been saying click together.
Yeah.
And I wanted that to be an aha moment for her in the movie too. But it was more like, where are you taking him? What's going on?
What did you do? That kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's tough because if you're basing it on a true story and, you know, maybe in real life, she's not that bright. Yeah. You know, maybe she genuinely did not figure it out. Or maybe he's good at keeping it a secret or, you know, whatever.
That's also true.
And so maybe it could have just been like, he's just another wife beater. As sad as that is to say, right?
Right.
So he, you know, just because someone hit their wife doesn't mean that they're a murderer of hundreds of people.
Right. They're just a run of the average.
And so, yeah, just a regular piece of shit, not a murderer piece of shit. You know, he hasn't got the mushroom to turn into a super piece of shit.
That's right.
And so I guess I can see that, but it was just, you know, everything was so shady all of the time. And I wish that while this is his story, I guess I wish that she was treated with a little bit more intelligence.
Right. Mr. and Mrs. Iceman.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
She's just sitting there on the cover looking confused and he's just staring at you.
Right.
Put him as Mrs. Smith where they're all
sexy. It's like has a knife.
Yeah. She's just like got her palms up like, what's going on? I don't know. Got a black eye.
What did you think about Captain America killing people and putting it in the freezer?
I thought the only sequence where that was effective was when they were just having a conversation and chopping people up with the dude hanging upside down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other than that, they don't really focus on Kuklinski being called the Iceman at all.
Yeah.
It says it in a headline once. Or but like, it's because of Mr. Freezy. He's just like associated with him.
Right. I think Freezy said, didn't he? Or something, they call you the Iceman.
Yeah, he had said something about it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. It just didn't seem like, oh, you know, here comes the Iceman, you know, or I was waiting for one of the goons to call him that after he killed the bum or something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was waiting for some sort of title to be placed upon him as opposed to like a, you know, half a second drop of a paper and one comment.
Right.
For that to be the title of the movie, I thought was a little odd. Because it's like, that's not really like the thing that he's attempting to do. Like we're watching him kill a bunch of people. We're not watching him pack a bunch of them in ice.
But like, to be fair, the people who are in charge of movie titles, a lot of them should be just punched in the mouth. Because like, even recently I've watched trailers for movies and been like, oh, that looks good. And then the title comes up and I'm like, oh my God, worthless. Worthless. Title.
Well, I'm glad that I hope that we're transitioning out of just the names of people for movies. Like if I didn't know anything about John Carter from Mars, the Edgar Rice Burroughs story, and I see a movie and it's called John Carter, I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Right.
Or Jack Reacher, right?
Yes.
Okay, it's got short Tom Cruise. What is it? What is it?
Yeah. Well, the ones that I don't like, they're always like the something.
Oh, yeah.
Or like one word. Like I understand that like having a succinct title is important, but the title itself is important. So like I'm not going to go off tangent too bad, but like The Town.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And then Concussion. I don't even want to watch that movie. For many reasons, but that title is like one of the main reasons. I don't want to watch that movie. The other one is I don't want to watch Will Smith hobble through an accent that he has no idea what he's doing. So.
Oh, yeah. I hear you. You're more of the Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain.
No, it doesn't have to be like Fu Wong Fu, thanks for everything or anything like that.
Yeah.
Like,
thanks for everything, Julie Newmar.
But like On the Waterfront is a sweet fucking title.
Yeah, it is.
This is awesome. Like, I am the person who buys books at Barnes & Noble that I have no idea what they're about because of the front of the book and the title. So, like, you gotta get people through the door first. Sure. But
that's part of the creativity, right?
Right. And that's what makes me so mad is, like, you could put a great movie together and then just slap a stupid title on it and I would just be like, no.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry about the tangent.
No. I think that's important for this one because, like I said, I think this one's a little two dimensional. I feel like it's, sure, we follow this guy and he goes through and he's getting really invested and in deep with this mob. And you know shit's going to go bad because at the beginning of the movie we are told that it goes bad.
Right.
So you're just sitting there waiting for him to get caught.
Yeah, and you like see, you know, he talks to his brother and you get like a flashback of him getting his ass kicked. But like,
yeah, that's the only flashback to when they were kids.
But like his emotion about it is to freak out and throw dishes and like be very physical with his wife. And so like, I immediately don't feel sorry for you. Like if he would have like slid down a wall and started sobbing or something, I'd been like, what the fuck? This guy has problems. But like, that's obviously not his character, but yeah, he just like, and that's the only basic emotion that we see out of him. Even when he's like slitting throats. He's
yeah.
Like, stone face.
I guess the whole wife beating thing. God, it just really bugs me because it just is trying to glorify or trying to like put a little lipstick on the sort of guy that he is.
Right, which is so fucked up because he works in a porn film lab, which whatever, if you want to work at porn, that's fine. But then he just switches from that to killing people.
Yeah.
And like, I want to be in the room where they're like, okay, he's a murderer, but we need to make him lovable. No, no, no puppies. No puppies.
Gotta love the family. Gotta love that family for sure. And you know, what does he say when they're talking about the girl that witnesses, the girl that's sleeping with James Franco, and then he lets escape? He says that he doesn't murder kids or women.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, well, he's an upstanding guy. But then actually he just beats the shit out of his wife. That's all.
Right. But he doesn't murder her, so he's okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's cool. I can just beat the hell out of her. And so I guess what I would have liked to, well, not like to, what I think would have been more appropriate in the film would be when he's freaking out to hit her, maybe accidentally, maybe not. And then to have her either have him threaten her again later or were implied that he's hitting her.
Right. Because I don't understand, like, and this has nothing to do with the, you know, the actors or anything, but like, I don't understand why you wouldn't just go balls deep on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you just do like a monster, you know, where like, just get it gritty, like show that he was like super scary and blah, blah, blah. But like, they kind of, cable TV'd it a little bit.
Yeah, do you think that is because it's the mob and it's cool, in quotes?
Maybe.
And she's supposed to be a monster, without the pun intended there.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, wow, look at what she did. Look how terrible she is. But here it's like, oh, well, you know, we have this montage of him killing a bunch of people, and look how cool it is, and...
Right, because the Iceman is supposed to be like a cool name.
No, yeah, it's a cool thing.
Yeah,
and so we got to gloss it up just a bit.
Yeah, no, whoever like, you know, wrote the screenplay obviously was like, had watched Godfather a couple times and was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have been a lot more bad, like not bad, but like, you know, gritty and interesting if we would have gotten like closer to the real story. But what
I would agree. I don't know. I think that, you know, I think that's the difference between a movie that's, you're like, all right, well, that was pretty good. And a movie you're like, fucking A, that was,
right?
I mean, that was unpleasant to sit through, but man, that was something.
Yeah.
Ultimately, like, what is the movie saying? The movie's not saying anything.
No.
You know,
it's
how
it's literally just like a gloss over biopic of a person.
Yeah, because like I was saying, the you know, the first movie was making me think like, oh, America, fuck yeah, you know, and all of that.
You should write a song about that.
Yeah, really. I'll be the first, I bet. So I was thinking of those sorts of things while I'm watching that movie and about, you know, we can all choose our own destinies and doing all this stuff. I watched this movie and was just like, all right, well, yeah, that was good. A lot of famous people in the cast.
Right. Yes.
Interesting. You know?
Well,
I thought it was fine. I just wasn't as gripped by it, I guess.
But I mean, we both did, I mean, surprisingly enough, both did research on it, and I think that however bad the real story is, it's probably more interesting than what happened on the screen.
Yeah. That's weird. I mean, that's usually, this is why you select this story, is to put it on the screen.
Right.
Don't just pussy around and put most of it on there. Like you were saying, you gotta really get in there.
Yeah, get in there. Go balls deep.
Yeah, I don't really like saying that as much as you do, so.
What?
I don't really like saying that as much as you do, so I'll just let you say it. Yeah, I don't know. It's uncomfortable for me. Whatever.
Anyway.
All right, well, do you have anything else about the how they didn't go balls deep on the Iceman?
No. Oh, you said it. That's nice. No, I don't. I'm done.
Awkward when I say it. All right, so that's going to wrap us up. We're just going to do those two movies this time around. If you have any comments for this show or our show in general or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79, and you can follow Rachel. She's @ladyzlag, and it is LadyzeLag, like flag, right?
Yep.
We also have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, if you wanted to buy me or maybe both of us on the waterfront, you could head over to Amazon.com and search for our wish list. It's full of movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies in case you're in the giving mood. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back with more movies about the mob. Thank you.